Now, here's your host of Sound Off, Brad Bennett.
Well, yes, here we are, our number two, and of course, that means let the sawdust fly, and we have Pete Woods in the house with us again this month. As you know, Let the Sawdust Fly happens here on Sound Off the last Wednesday of every month, with the rare exceptions caused by baseball problems, but those are all done now, so I think we're here at the last Wednesday of every month from here on out, Pete Woods. And I know you've got kind of an exciting personality that you're going to have with you, somebody who spent a lot of time on the road all over in a number of different states. But why don't you introduce your guest, Pete, and talk a little bit about what today's show is going to bring people.
Well, thank you, Brad, once again letting us back on here to talk about some of the things that happen in the timber industry and folks out there willing to take time every day to listen. And we really want to send out a thank you that you're willing to do that. Today, folks, who we have with us via phone is a guy by the name of Jimmy Locklear. Jimmy is from the, let's say, southern Michigan. He's going to have a little bit of a slant to his voice sounds, but it's pretty cool. He's not an upper peninsula, Uper, but he's a lower peninsula type guy. And he's got a lot of experience in the timber industry. He's been in it his whole life. He grew up in the logging family, got out of that a while ago and started his own business, been bouncing around a little bit, but always in the timber industry. He has spoken at 27 different states. He has been in over 80 speaking engagements. He's known throughout the whole timber industry quite well. He's quite colorful. It's been a pleasure to get to know Jimmy here and talk about the timber industry. And last time I saw him was about a month and a half ago, and I talking to him, I thought, would you be willing to come on? And he thought about it, and he said yes. So I'm glad he's willing to do this. And Jimmy, are you there?
Yes, sir, Peter.
Great. You want to explain to the folks who you are a little bit and a little more background than what I know, and it sure is a pleasure to have you on.
Well, I do kind of, I hope we won't need an interpreter. You know, sometimes that accent just comes through, and that's really confusing because when they go back to North Carolina, then they're confused. So, you know, I started to where I'm at. No, we're really, truly blessed. I've had having a great life, and I love our industry. You know, I'm excited to be on your show today. I know we've talked about it a couple of times, and, you know, I would seek you out, but you didn't realize it because you're so recognizable when I see you at a meeting.
What are you talking about? I try and dress okay.
But the other reason I'm excited is I'm excited to have an opportunity to speak to your audience of loggers and truckers and just really tell them firsthand how much I appreciate them and the work they do. I've been there. It's difficult. It's daylight to sunset. It's 7 days a week. Profit margins are thin and thin and thin and thinner, and I don't know how they do it. But I think they do it because they love it, even whether they realize that or not. So I do have great appreciation for what they do. And then our truckers, I mean, come on. You know, anything pretty much you have, unless you walked out of the woods and got it, you got it on a truck. And so these guys, sometimes I don't think they really know how much so many of us appreciate what they do. So thank you for giving me an opportunity to say that, you know. Mm-hmm. My career started, like you said, with my dad, and, you know, we had some bad experiences back in the day. We actually had a man killed, you know, on the logging side, and we had a 19-year-old paralyzed. So, you know, it was not a good time, but there was a lot of learning from those situations. And once Dad decided to retire, I did go in a different direction, you know, with the trucking. And then, you know, I was not totally happy with that. It was a bigger challenge than I was willing to take on at the time. And wound up in the insurance side. And I guess it's kind of curious to the guy that had the background in the losses we had while I was in insurance, but I think they felt I could relate to people. And so I've been blessed to be able to do that. And started out mainly in the what they call loss control or safety, working with our loggers. And I was sort of, I call it the guinea pig. In other words, if they wanted to develop something, they'd say, well, let's see if Jimmy can do it. If he can do it, anybody can. And so my first task was developing the chainsaw training program, which is still ongoing in North Carolina now. And so I had a little bit to do with getting that set up and run that program a year or so. And then they brought on some folks that were a whole lot better than I was at doing the teaching and doing the felling. And I moved on into becoming an insurance agent. So, you know, I've been on different sides of this. My understanding of insurance has changed considerably once I got on the insurance side, because, you know, I always thought there was some guy sitting in a skyscraper somewhere just deciding how much he thought could suck out of us. You know, that's how I felt about it. But insurance is math. And it's a phrase I coined many years ago, that insurance is math, not magic. You know, it's all about our losses, overall losses for our industry, statewide, state you're in, whatever insurance group you're insured with, that comes into play in your rates. But then the most important factor is your own personal experiences from a loss standpoint. So there's a lot of math that goes into this, and also I think I didn't realize that insurance is bound by laws and statutes, and so they sort of, it's just not a magic number that they decide how much can they get. It really is something that's influenced by lots of different factors. You know, you and I talked a couple of times prior to this, and I guess the best way to get people to really think about this, if they're not at that point yet, is it's a whole lot cheaper to insure a guy hauling feathers than it is to insure a guy hauling dynamite. You know, it's just factors. What are the risks? And the logging industry, actually, the risks have improved considerably. I was thinking earlier, you know, that, you know, at one time and back in the day when I started out in the logging business, trucking was just part of the, I would call it, assembly line. It was part of getting the tree from the stump to the mill. It was a machine. It was like a skidder. It was like a buncher. It was like a loader. It just fit in there. But a few years back, I'm going to say, I guess about 1990 or so, when FMCSA was formed and they began to look at what was happening and come up with guidelines and compliance issues to make things safer, it all changed. So if you have a truck, you're a trucking company. In one way or the other, you're going to be a trucking company. And you have to look at it that way. But, and I believe you said, I know you said your father was your, Peter, was your grandfather as well in the logging?
Yes. I'm a third generation. Our children are fourth generation. And we've been doing it all along. We've never stopped. And I think there's a lot of generational logging, timber harvesting managers of the forest across the country that are like that. You got the most I've ever heard, I think, is four or five generations, something like that, I think. And so, but there's one thing that's, Jimmy, could you explain a little bit to the folks out there? There's something that's coming down the pipe that I thought was very critical, and then we'll move on to others. But there's something to do with the internet and folks out there that may not realize with their CDL license that if they're not registered the right way, it will drop in about 13 months, I think it is, or something like that, isn't it?
Yeah, really important. I discovered this, you know, since I'm from the South, they won't let me work from December till April because I don't know how to drive in the snow. But, you know, once the snow melts, they'll let me come back to work. But no, really, it's just some time we've taken off. We maintain two homes, and we do snowbird, my wife and I. But, yeah, I discovered this last April when I got back to work. I try to keep up with things. I try to go to FMCSA site on a regular basis and sort of see what's coming, what's important, what's the emphasis on. And I heard about this, and I was already aware. In 2020, they began what they call the clearinghouse, FMCSA Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse. were, and it was mandated at that time that all companies with CDL drivers had to register there, and all CDL drivers, if the name was going to be pulled, they had to be registered. Now, that's a little kind of funky the way I said that. The driver was not mandated to be registered. That has changed, by the way. But in the beginning, if you had a new hire, you had to go in the clearinghouse to look and see. And that clearinghouse, the short version is, if you've refused or tested positive on a drug test, that information would be there for your potential employer to see that you had had an issue. Now, that doesn't mean they wouldn't hire you, but, you know, it's a way of knowing who you are hired and knowing, you know, their history as far as related to drugs. So that began in 2020, and when they went to hire somebody, if they were not registered, they would have to have the driver to register so that they could follow the compliance of checking that driver's history in regard to drugs on the clearinghouse. Now, what happened was in a three-year period, only 25% of all CDL holders in the United States had registered. So they thought, okay, we can fix this. And the way they went about fixing it is this, and I would prefer to read it right from Federal Motor Carriers, so it's not misquoted, but this is a summary. The FMCSA is amending its regulations to establish a requirement for state driver's license agencies to access and use information obtained through the Drug and Alcohol Clearinghouse, or DACA. We call it DACA, it's D-H-A-C, capital letters. FMCSA administered database containing driver-specific controlled substance and alcohol records. The state driver's license agencies must not issue, renew, upgrade, or transfer a commercial driver's license or commercial driver's learner's permit for any individual is prohibited regulation from performing safety-sensitive functions, including driving a commercial motor vehicle, due to one or more drug alcohol program violations. So it's literally what it's saying is the state driver's license must remove the CLP, which is a learner's permit, or CDL privilege from the driver's license of an individual subject to commercial vehicle driving. So really what that says to me is when you go to renew your CDL, you must be registered in this database.
And if you're not?
And if you're not, I understand. I don't have it in writing and can see it, but I have been told there would be a grace period of a short period of time the person could get registered. And if they don't in that time, then they would actually have to go all the way back to the beginning as if they did not have CDLs, and they'd have to go through the process of entry-level driver training and all these types of things. So it is really important that we get registered, that all our CDL drivers get registered. And, okay, the first thing is, well, this, the government, you know, is just another way to get a dollar out of us. Well, there's no charge, except when the employer goes to what they call query or inquire, which they would do that when a new hire, and they would do that each year from the time they hired that driver just to check the record. It's $1.25 per driver. So it's not like it doesn't cost the driver, but it costs the company to be able to query or pull that. And it's $1.25 a shot, and then if you have more drivers and that type of thing, they have different programs where you can buy and save a few bucks on it. So, you know, I mean, yeah, that's an expense, but that's not a bad expense. But what I really want people to understand, because, yeah, I did get some blowback. Well, it's not my rule. It's not an insurance rule. This is Federal Motor Carriers. This is, we, you know, if we're going to do business, we need to comply with that. There's lots of accidents, and these, I know our drivers see this a lot on different blogs and websites and emails that they get, and Facebook. We've got a lot of accidents where drivers just run into 50 cars stopped at a construction zone or slowed down. And those drivers, generally speaking, check positive for some type of drug or alcohol or both. And so there is a purpose to this. I know, Peter, you know, well, the four-wheelers are causing a lot of wrecks, too, and this is true. I see that.
Oh, hold on here, Jimmy.
We can't control it. Yep.
Hold on here. Go ahead, Brad.
Yep. Peter, we're going to have to take our first break here. Maybe when we come back, maybe you can have Jimmy, because I thought it was kind of interesting. You know, a lot of people, when they see trucks on the road, they think truck is a truck is a truck is a truck. You know, they're probably the insurance costs are the same for all trucks. And that's not the case. It has to do with how much freight you haul, what kind of freight you haul, yep, what the exposure is of that freight. So let's talk a little bit about that when we come back as well.
Sure.
But we're going to have to take our first break here. Jimmy, thank you for being on the show with us today. Pete, let's do that when we come back right after this break.
Giant Redwood, the larch, the fir, the mighty Scots pine, the smell of fresh-cut timber, the crash of mighty trees. With my best girl by my side, we'd sing, sing, sing.
I'm a lumberjack and I'm okay. I sleep all night and I work all day.
He's a lumberjack and he's okay. He sleeps all night and he works all day.
I cut down trees, I eat my lunch, I go to the laboratory. On Wednesday I'll go shopping.
See, Jimmy, you might not know it, but that's actually, we recorded Peter Wood singing that song for the studio for the intro to his show here. So you might not have known that that Peter is a very talented musician as well as, you know, host of this show once a month.
Now, Brad, remember, well, we don't talk politics during this section.
All right.
I did recognize Peter's voice, Brad, so just so you'll know.
Brad, really quick.
I wanted to see him dance.
Go
the
ahead.
The visual thing in that dancing would really be off the charts. You know, that would go viral.
Brad, on your question about that, just one real quick thing. Could you give out information on the DACA just in case somebody wants to punch it up and look to see it for themselves? They got to do it themselves. But and then we could go to what you've seen over the country, multi-state, how logs are hauled, because you've seen it all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, just quickly. I mean, I probably didn't do a great explanation, but guys, this is serious. You're not going to be able to get your CDL privilege renewed unless you're registered. And that begins November the 18th of 2024. So it's coming, and I recommend please get on there, get this done. It's not that big a deal. You may need a little help. You may not. But get to FMCSA. Just the best way I'd say to explain it, just search FMCSA. Drug Clearinghouse or DOC, D-H-A-C, I'm sorry, D-C, D-A-C-H, F-M-S-S-A, D-A-C-H. Go there, and if you still have questions, you probably will. Whatever state you're in and wherever you get your CDLs renewed, contact the state. There's lots of resources out here to help you get this done. But I do encourage you, let's get on this, because it's something we got to do, whether we like it or not. We're going to have to do this.
Mm-hmm. Right. With that, Brad, how about the multi-state different hauling of wood products and that? And Jimmy can explain his thoughts on it, what he has seen, instead of from my shoes, because I always look at Minnesota, how we run six axles a lot here, and then other plates are five. But then you get over Michigan, you got multi-axles. You wonder, how in the heck does that work? But you could tell folks a little bit about that there, Jimmy?
I will, and I think that's another reason I guess I can even at the age of 74 to be excited about what we're doing and how we're helping and attempting to help folks. Is, you know, I grew up in the South, and we were, you know, five-axle you know, 80,000 pound, and now they have a 10,000 pound tolerance, which means they can haul up to 90. If you go 1 pound over, it goes back to 80,000, so you don't want to do that. I think maybe Virginia, probably South Carolina, a couple of states have adopted that, and then some other states are different. So, again, it's really a complicated thing in each individual. Whatever state you're in, you really need to become aware of what your guidelines and what your requirements are. It's all over the place. But for the reference of what you're saying, I like to break it down into four segments, the South, the Northeast, the Midwest, and the West. And as I told you in previous conversations, pretty much that those styles of logging are so different that the only thing similar is they call it a tree. They cut a tree. Beyond that, the weights, the products that are made, there's so much difference. And one difference that I've learned since being in Michigan now for 4 years, is culture. You know, the culture is different in the South than it is the Midwest, than it is the West, than it is the Northeast. So the problems they have, they all have problems, but they're different problems. They're, you know, in the West, they deal a lot more with regulation. I think the Northeast has some of that. But the trucks, the style of hauling, the number of axles is all different. What I will say and what I do want to highlight, Michigan, for those that are not aware of it, and I was not until I moved here, we can actually run up to 11 axles and 164,000 pounds, and we can run that on interstate.
Wow.
And, you know, and I was told, you know, by several people that I trust, I don't know what Google will tell you, but this actually come about many, many years ago because of the auto industry and because of Henry Ford. I think Henry Ford played a hand in being able to transport materials from the iron regions, from up in Canada, the UP, and parts of Wisconsin, Minnesota. It was about bringing raw materials in to build automobiles primarily, but yeah, other things I'm sure as well.
That makes total sense, guys. Look, Jimmy and Pete, we're going to have to take a quick break. We got to do our CBS News break here. But when we come back, let's talk a little bit about the differences from states because, man, you'd never be able to haul like that in Minnesota. They'd the Highway Patrol would have you over in a minute. So let's take a break, do our CBS News, then we'll come back with more. Let the Sawdust Fly with Peter Woods here on 610 KDAL Radio. So, Peter, yep. We were talking to Jimmy a little bit. Jimmy was explaining what kind of loads are okay to haul in Michigan.
Yep.
We'd never see anything like that in Minnesota, would we?
No, the laws are different in Minnesota, and Wisconsin is quite similar to Minnesota, but a little bit different. But then you get over to Michigan, it becomes a different little bit, of a different animal there. And it'd be great for Jimmy to explain what he has seen from his shoes, because I always like bigger loads the better. I mean, if I could haul 200,000 pounds, I'd love to do that. But I'd probably be arrested, and the DOT would love to talk to me quite a bit. But over in Michigan, they run 11 axles, and I've seen those loads. It's very impressive, folks. I mean, it is huge loads. 165,000 pounds coming at you down the road. All those tires turning, 42 or 44 tires. I can't remember how many. Jimmy, you want to talk about that just a little bit with the folks out there?
Yeah, absolutely. And that was, as I said, I think that's really kept my interest and passion here. It is so different here. But when you stop and think about the logic of it, you've eliminated almost half the trucks and less trucks. You know, again, they're hauling 50-ton payloads where you guys might haul, I don't know, you could get maybe 29, some are just 25. Ton payload. So almost half the trucks, you're eliminating the trucks, which eliminate exposure. You know, the truck can't wreck if it's not out there. There was some tests run by the association's GLTPA, as well as I think Matt, Michigan Association of Timber, were involved. Our folks were involved in this some years ago, and they're actually going to do some tests upcoming. But they found that 11-axle truck, fully loaded, 164,000 pounds, would stop 30% quicker than a regular 18-wheeler. And the rollover factor was, to my understanding, and I don't want to tell the wrong thing, but I saw numbers that said it was about a 70% less rollover. So, you know, you think, well, why? Well, you got all these wheels down on the ground. Also, it's less impact on the highway because most of those axles are limited to 13,000 pounds. There's a couple of axles in a certain placements on the truck. They can carry, I think, 16, maybe 18, that type of thing. So I'm not an expert on it. I did look this morning. Michigan Center for Truck Safety is a great little organization. They have a booklet, and they showed the different setups. There's 21 different axle setups for the state of Michigan. But it works, and even to the point that MIDOT, the Michigan Department of Transportation, actually published something saying they felt that it done less damage to the roads and was safer. But you're always going to have folks that don't like big trucks, so you have to have that battle. And the difference I've seen here versus in the South, I just don't see the number of wrecks. And generally, when trucks wreck here, generally speaking, it's the other vehicle's fault. We're in the South, we tend to roll over because of, the loads and the top heaviness and things of that nature. So it's quite a difference.
But also, Brad, Jimmy, why don't you explain to folks, when you're driving 11-axle trucks, those guys are all pretty well trained. They have to be able to run a loader, got to handle that truck going in and out of the woods. It's a different ball game compared to somebody running 5 axles in the Southeast, a little top heavy, and they put somebody in there, a lot of over road, or somebody could jump in there and, okay, start hauling wood. But to do 11-axle truck like that, you're not going to throw anybody in there. That's a different ballgame. Could you explain that a little bit?
Yeah, and I would also like to say, I think that's part of the culture. This has been going on for a number of years, so most of our drivers here kind of grew up with it, just like many of us grew up in the logging business. They have to be able to, you have to lift those axles and certain axles and things. That truck won't turn when you go around an exit ramp. So there's a lot to being able to distribute the weight with the airbags. It's you know, being able to make the turns and maneuver those trucks, as well as a large portion of them do have self-loaders. So the truck driver here is a little bit different individual than what you might see in some other states. And I've been very impressed. One other thing, the big push that we've done here, and I've tried to connect the dots of compliance to safety, and we're doing a good job of that. Folks are coming around on that. But cameras, dash cams, are critically important to protect the owner and driver. They're not there to spy on the owner and driver. They're there to provide, if somebody else does something wrong, proof of that. And the number of times that those dash cams have saved million-dollar claims for our insurers is amazing. And that's been all over the country. That's not just in Michigan.
Yep, I hear a lot about those cameras. It's becoming more and more popular. And it is true, to protect the ones that are doing what is right over and over again.
Yep. And, you know, the thing folks don't understand, your cell phone, they can, if they subpoena your cell phone, that cell phone literally has every bit of the information. If you weaved across the road, if what speed you was, exact time, location to a pinpoint. So if you've done something wrong, they already have that evidence. What you need is evidence in case somebody else does something wrong that causes you a wreck. That's why you need a camera. And I think the more I've stressed it, I have that in my presentations and show videos, and literally it's amazing how it's snowballing, and lots of folks are going in that direction, and I highly recommend.
So if I was thinking about this, Jimmy and Brad, if I wanted to go, let's say, a little bit north of the speed limit, it's best not to have my cell phone with?
Well,
okay.
That's up to you. I'm driving the speed limit. I don't know about you guys.
I'm going to borrow Jimmy's phone and go for a little fun. shoot. Oh, well.
But, well, I'll tell you what, guys, it has been fun having you on. Peter, you're going to have to get Jimmy on again here before too long so we can talk more, because the 45 minutes or so that you have for these interviews are just too short. I had a whole bunch of questions I wanted to ask him, but we just don't have the time the way our show is structured. So,
yep.
Jimmy, I want to thank you for coming on and especially giving us I had just one quick question for you, though. When you talked about how with more axles and more tires, you can actually brake in a shorter distance, is that because there's more brakes then on the road as well with the tires? They each have a braking system?
Absolutely. With 11 axles, you know, that's, let's see, if unless I'm mistaken, that's, there's two to the axle, that's 22 brakes, you know, versus 10.
Wow. Yeah, you can see that for sure. Well, listen, we've got to take the break here. Again, we want to thank you for coming on today. We've got a number of things going on here that we're going to have to get back to, but we're going to take our Minnesota news break. Peter, thank you again, as always, for Sound Off, and we'll be back shortly.
KDAL time is 12:53. I want to go to Canal Park, Brad. I want to go to the Army Corps of Engineers. 50 degrees, a light northeast wind. We're overcast. And, boy, what a segment there from Pete Wood and Jimmy Locke. What is it, Jimmy?
Lot of information in a very short period of time. Hey, is this news factual that you just laid on me? Do we, in fact, have a new Speaker of the House?
Johnson has already received 220 votes. The threshold is 218. Jeffries, 209. And the interesting thing is no others received votes and zero present. And, of course, Mark from Moose Lake kind of laid out those details a couple of days ago. But, yes, Mike Johnson has the votes for Speaker, and the madness is over.
Now, I don't know much about Mike Johnson other than the fact that he is from Louisiana. I have read one little piece about him that said he's a very, here's his theme. And I mentioned it earlier in the show. He says, my theme is simple, trust and teamwork. And I guess that's what you want in the Speaker of a House. You want somebody that you can trust, that will work together to get things done. Wouldn't it be nice if all of a sudden we could find some common ground on things where we could get budgets approved, we could get some border protection done, things like that.
Are you hinting towards some bipartisan?
I wouldn't mind seeing a little bipartisanship once in a while.
That's refreshing, Brad, yes.
Well, there you have it. So Mike Johnson, what did he get, 220 votes?
Yeah, that's the count. I don't know if they're still counting, but that's the last number I saw. Again, the threshold was 218, and he surpassed that.
I thought it was 217, but maybe 218. Anyway, that means that he got literally just about everybody on the Republican side.
Yes.
So that's really good news.
Correct. It is. And there was a lot of standing ovations. I was monitoring C-SPAN. Of course, we had that Let the Sawdust Fly segment going on, but so Mike Johnson elected Speaker of the House. There you go. And the NASDAQ is down 318. What is up with that? The NASDAQ?
I think they're looking at the war in Ukraine continuing on, the fact that this war in Israel against Hamas and possibly two or three other terrorist organizations may become bigger than it is in the past. So who knows? And you know what? The economy is not doing all that well. Yes, we have had some increases in some areas. We've had good jobs reports. But a lot of the jobs reports, I'll tell you, I saw a report this morning. Hotel workers in Los Angeles are out on strike. But guess what? The hotels are still working. Guess who they're hiring in Los Angeles to take the place of striking union workers?
I would
illegal
say
immigrants.
Oh, I was going to say striking writers and actors, but okay.
No, illegal immigrants.
Sure,
people that
not?
Are new to
go.
This country.
Yeah.
Yeah. They'll work. They want to work.
There you go. Huh?
So, I don't know.
Wow, that's something.
Stuff.
NASDAQ down 315. The Dow was down 105, S&P down 60. Oofta.
Well, I'll tell you, I got into the stock market at the wrong time. But so's my life. That's the way it goes.
You know, the thing
I wanted to very quickly remind or let people know, because you may not know this at all yet. If you're a veteran and you're looking to do something for Thanksgiving, you're going to be all by yourself or you just don't want to be by yourself. Richard I. Bong, a Veterans Historical Center, is offering a free meal on Thanksgiving Day for veterans. Thursday, November 23rd. From 11 to 3 p.m. this year, we'll be serving a maximum of 225 meals. So reservations are required. Well, that's a lot of meals, but you got to call and reserve. Patrons have the option of dining in at the Bong Center, curbside pickup, or delivery. Your address is the address is 305 Harborview Parkway, Superior, next to Perkins. We have the ability to feed 225 people this year, and we'd like to invite those that have nowhere to go this Thanksgiving to enjoy the holiday with us. There will be turkey, ham, numerous sides and desserts. Watch the football game on our large screen TV and enter in a 4 to win a door prize. But reservations are now open at the Richard I. Bong Memorial Center. You can give them a call. This press release came from John Gidley, the executive director. You can call them at 715-392-7151. So with that said, I think we pretty much have wrapped up hour number two. We got a lot to do in the last hour here, though, folks. So please come back, get some coffee, join us for the Wednesday edition of Sound Off right here on 610 KDAL.